There, there. We've got an Urujar and a white man pulling an injured person to safety. Get in on that. Get me their faces. Can we get names? I need names.
Kale pulled the crystal free and very quickly pressed the button that overrode the warning signal that would tell everyone that the font wasn't going to correctly shoot a giant beam of energy at Heaven's Spire anymore.
Slavery was a long time ago, the Manticore growled. Nobody still alive ever owned slaves or was a slave, and it's long past time that we stopped using it as a go-to explanation every time an Urujar citizen does something wrong. But you cannot let the people who refuse to recover poison the rich traditions that others can bring, the Griffin said, pouncing again. I mean, look at this. Look here. We've got an Urujar athlete and a white athlete working together, risking their own lives to pull someone away from the fire. Names and intel on your buns, Slant said. Spin family has the compromise.
Slowly and easily, Kale stepped back from the pane toward the ladder and freedom.
That's Tierra Murchill from Rossoniki, said the Manticore, shoving the Griffin away. A fantastic gymnast whose parents reportedly moved to Rossoniki and worked tirelessly to give their daughter the chance to realize her dreams.
Kale crept back into the safety of the shadows, breathing a tiny sigh of relief.
I think it has to come down to family, the Griffin said, no longer attacking. Urujar, or white. The children who grow up to be successful are the children whose parents take the time to raise them properly. Oh, I completely agree, the Manticore said. And, you know, it's great to see Tierra here, doing her people proud. And you have to think, how much different would her life have been had she been raised by someone less caring? Someone like that Tressa du Quail from a few weeks ago, the tax-dodging lady.
Kale stopped.
Oh, yes. I mean, a woman like that is setting a bad example for Urujar everywhere, the Griffin said. Just like the woman attacking the stadium here today.
Kale turned.
If the Urujar want to stop people from treating them badly, the Manticore said, we need a lot more Tierra Murchills and a lot fewer Tressa du Quails, if you know what I mean.
Nobody, Kale said as he raised his hand, boot knife ready. Slant and the puppeteers turned. The knife in Kale's hand flew end over end and smashed into the main crystal pane, shattering it with a flare of crackling light and a burst of smoke.
Talks trash about my mum!
He saw four paladins staring at him, open-mouthed, and decided that it was probably a good time to run. As zombies went, those of the Smith Priests of Pessa were particularly hardy. As Derry charged into them, fists flying, Desidora tried to force her eyes to see through the painful abundance of magic here in the temple. That had been part of the trap, she realized, using her sensitivity to auras against her. It was like trying to read a letter written in fine print while someone shoved a blazing torch in her face, and she squinted, her head pounding, and grasped at the weakness she'd found before, in the zombie Mr. Lively had made from poor Derenki. These were different. Their wards were stronger, reinforced and overlapping one another like the scales of a fish, so that no one area showed a gap Desidora's magic could exploit.
Desidora! Pyvik shouted.
He had grabbed a huge sword from the wall and stood by Desidora's side, keeping the zombies away with great sweeps of the massive blade.
What's wrong?
She stared at the zombies. Nothing is wrong. She let the death aura take her, deeper than she had gone in recent memory, deeper than any time since that terrible day when she had nearly killed Kale. There were times when the only way to fight power was with more power. When she opened her eyes, the auras were still there, still bright, but the light no longer hurt her eyes. The wrought iron walls had all rusted and sprouted spikes, as had the banding on the pews, which were now carved bone instead of wood. Every decorative piece on the wall was jet black and inlaid with runes of cold silver. Her skin was the dead white moon against the starless night sky of her hair and dress.
"Hear me, Fallen of Pessar," she said, and her words were the wind between the stars. "I am the chosen of Bin Kodar. I am the keeper of death."
"So is he," said the Master Smith sadly, as he kept coming.
"Then it is time that he learned not to bring zombies," said Desidora, as she curled her fingers into claws and raked them up into the air.
Every zombie in the temple shuddered as her power ripped into the scaling wards around them, bending the wards out of place.
"To a fight!"
She spared her fingers forward, and her magic stabbed out through the little gaps her raking strike had left in their wards, and every zombie went still.
Wither, death, priestess!
She flicked her fingers, as though clearing a bit of unwanted dirt from her nails, and the zombies fell, broken and dead.
Pitiful, she hissed,
and then caught herself. Because that wasn't who she wanted to be, and let the death fade away from her, let the colour and the feelings come back, at least mostly. She left just enough of the death aura around her to be ready if another attack came.
Sister Desidora, Derry asked.
I'm all right. She closed her eyes, inhaled deeply through her nose, and when she opened her eyes again, it was true.
Thank you, but Mr. Lively is very good at shielding his auras.
With the aura of death mostly gone, she looked at the temple. It was strewn with bodies, young and old, senior smiths and junior acolytes, all of them dead and gone now.
Such a waste.
This is why people are afraid of death priests, Pyvik said softly.
Why would he do this? Derry asked.
He was a priest just like them, wasn't he?
He is an ancient, Pyvik said. We're not people to them. We're animals, something you ride or eat or wear as you need without a second thought.
Derry frowned.
Animals don't worship the gods, though.
Desidora raised an eyebrow.
How do you know?
Be careful of your answer, Pyvik added with a grin. You might find yourself having a harder time eating meat afterward.
Derry didn't smile back.
I guess we should look for the gate, he said,
and began to walk along one of the walls, squinting up at the items hung there.
Any ideas? Pyvik asked.
Desidora squinted through the glare of the magic again.
It's bright, very bright. These wards are new.
She looked at Pyvik.
Lively put these up himself.
Why? Pyvik asked, frowning.
To stop us, you think?
It's because the gate to their world is open, Derry said, not looking back. First, this gate opening is what scared them into leaving last time, so they want to make certain that doesn't happen again. And second, each gate is like a dent in a suit of armour, only the armour is the walls of the world. The first dent makes the armour weaker against the next one.
Desidora raised an eyebrow.
That's very insightful, dearie.
He looked back this time, smiling shyly.
I studied some of what magic does in the Knights of Gedisar. Mr. Dragon let me read some of his books. I wanted to know what I am.
I think the younger version of yourself would say that you are you, Desidora said, smiling back. And that is all that matters.
He laughed.
You're probably right.
He reached the edge of the wall and turned to the anvil-shaped altar.
The altar is very clean.
Most priests don't let their altars get dirty.
Desidora tried to feel through the auras, looking for anything that seemed out of place. The problem was that everything was out of place.
No, Derry said. I mean that I used to watch the smiths at the farm where I grew up. A real anvil has lots of little scuff marks on it from the hammer and whatever is being forged on it.
Yes, Desidora nodded. They don't actually use it as an anvil, though. It's ornamental.
Then she got it.
And the Temple of Perser, Pyvik said, nodding in approval, holds nothing that is purely ornamental.
He strode up through the pews to the altar, where Derry was already looking at it.
You found our gate. Locke would be proud.
Desidora blinked through the magic, then let a little more of the death aura wash back over her to fight through the glare as she headed toward the altar as well. It had no particular aura around it, but in a room filled with overwhelming magic, that in itself was peculiar. Derry's brow furrowed in a thoughtful frown.
Captain Pyvik, that reminds me of something I wanted to ask earlier. You said that you missed Captain Locke.
Pyvik raised an eyebrow and looked from the altar to the young man.
I'm not sure me wishing the lady I love was here matters right now, Derry.
Derry shook his head.
No, you said you missed her, and when I talked to Locke one time, she said that you and she were both scouts, and scouts never said that they missed one another. Oh.
Pyvik laughed and clapped Derry on the shoulder.
I can see how it would be confusing if Locke explained it that way. The truth is...
His fist slammed into Derry's gut. Desidora froze, then broke into a run.
But you shouldn't be asking stupid questions like that in the first place, Pyvik said.
Still in the same friendly conversational style, as his elbow came up and then slammed down onto Derry's back. The young man fell, tried to push himself to his feet, and then collapsed, groaning.
You were my creation, son.
He hauled Derry up with one hand and slammed him across the anvil.
Your job was to let us back into this world and then die. Your friend Isadora fouled my plans.
His fist slammed down onto Derry's chest, smashing the young man into the anvil, and a noise like a great bell rocked the temple. Isadora staggered as a wave of sheer power crashed into her.
But since you're so intent on learning about the Shadowlands,
Pyvik went on and brought his fist down again. Again, magic blasted out from the impact, and Isadora fell to her knees. Derry seemed smaller on the altar now, or farther away.
Why don't you take a good, close look?
Pyvik brought his fist down one more time, and this time Isadora fought through the wave of magic that smashed into her. But it was too late. The altar was bare as Pyvik turned back to her, smiling.
Smith Lively of Bin Kodan, he said,
and tore off the sleeve of his shirt to reveal the paladin band glittering on his upper arm.
A pleasure to meet you, sister.
The hunter golems rose up in the mining lift, and just like that, everything was clear for Ululenia. Indomitable, Tern, you will deal with the children of the ancients, she said, and she let the elves and dwarves slip from her grip. And if there is kindness within you, do not tell Derry what I became. Then she charged. They were hunters, pursuers, stalkers, as wolves or great cats or the fox after the rabbit. They were vicious, and they were deadly. So was she. They brought their spears up to meet her charge, but they were slow, surprised, and she didn't hit them in her normal shape, but instead slunk through their lines as a shining white weasel. Then ripped out the leg of one hunter as a wolf, and then darted up as a hummingbird as their spears came down. She was the terrible pain whose beauty made it worth the risk. She was the fairy mistress who lured the innocent away and sent them back as old men. She was sex and regret and all the unfair lessons of nature. She flexed her power in the air over the hunters, and a vine, dark and thorned but good nevertheless, sprouted from the wall, coiled around the control lever for the lift, and pulled it back to descend. She smashed back down into them as a great white bear, and their spears raked her hide, and it hurt. It burned like fire, but at least it was an honest hurt, and she roared and ripped and tore with fangs and claws as the hunters swarmed around her. The fight was too much for the old lift, and something snapped. She felt it as the hunters did, and was at once the hummingbird again, but as the lift fell, a silver net flew out and fell over her, and its poisonous links racked her with pain. And she fell, just as the hunters did, as the lift rattled and bucked and slid, and finally crashed far below. The impact shocked and bruised her, but also flung her free, and as she landed, she was herself again, or what she was now, anyway. Not a unicorn, but a nightmare, her clawed hooves and fanged muzzle things of terror instead of beauty. She shrieked out a challenge to the hunters, and they rose to their feet, shaken and battered, but still ready to fight. She'd forgotten the kobolds, the little magical fox people of the mine. They lurked at the edge of the cavern, slipping into the walls as easily as shadows, clearly afraid. She imagined the taste of their throats crushed in her jaws, and then shook her head and looked back to the hunters. There was no life in them to steal, but they were the enemy. The little kobolds were not. If she were to die, she would do so fighting those who deserved it, red in tooth and claw. She lunged, slashed, ripped. They were fast, even battered and broken as they were, and she smashed one apart, but the others sent spears into her flank, and she kicked and clawed, but they danced away. The pain was an all-consuming fire, burning away the magic that would let her shift and change, and so she stayed the monster that she was, and shrieked another challenge. And as two of them came at her, her clawed hooves struck down their spears, and with her jaws she ripped one of their heads off. The third sank his spear into her side from behind, and she screamed and kicked, and though she sent him skidding across the floor, he had struck deep, and she staggered, her back legs weak and shaky. The one before her leaped upon her and grabbed at her throat, and as pain burned across her, she realized that he was using his tangled net to choke the life from her. She reared, but it was too much, and she stumbled back, crashed into the wall, and fell. It all hurt so much. It hurt enough to drive away the ugliness that had turned her into something else. Her horn flickered and went dark, but it took the claws with it, and Ulilenia turned away, curled in upon herself, and tried to remember the happy, bright days in the forest one last time. Arms grabbed at her from all sides, pinning her to the wall, and then everything went black.